This has been a production of the Morningstar Men's Weekend Bible Study Podcast, meeting at Morningstar Fellowship Church at 9th and Main Streets in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, every Saturday morning beginning at 7:30. Free coffee, free donuts, and all men are welcome to attend. Thank you for listening to this podcast on Training for Life and the series on spiritual coaching as led by Glenn Singer.
So there.
All right, this is why we have so much to edit out of this recording every week. Okay. So we've wrapped up the work concept under the umbrella of work. Does anybody remember the primary components of work? Four primary components that we said, the intersection where a man's inner life meets his outer world, and there were four primary intersecting points that we have discussed that fit under the overall large umbrella of work.
I hate my boss, I hate my coworkers.
Okay, that is your inner man's response to your outer world. Good, but that's not quite what we were looking for. Seriously? Is this going to be this way all morning? Okay. Anybody? Any of these components. The first one was that I work to be a provider and protector. That's one of the intersection points. So that is typically what we refer to, at least in this society, as when a man leaves his home and he goes off into the larger world and does something. And as a, how do we work? What are the two components of work? We were created to work in what two fashions? To be blank and blank. You weren't here, so you're excused from knowing, but please don't guess. What's? No, we were intended to be receivers and givers. And what kind of givers in particular? Gracious givers, we said. Cheerful is not a bad substitute answer. We are designed, we are built to be gracious givers. And then what kind of receivers? Thankful or grateful? Grateful receivers. And so when we go out into the work world, when we leave our homes, when we go out to do what we do in order to provide, we take with us those twin ideals. It's not easy to do, but we want to be gracious givers and grateful receivers. How'd you do this past week at that? See, I hope that, obviously I'm failing miserably at this, but I try to create memorable phrases so that along about Wednesday afternoon, when life is really uphill, that you can think to yourself, is part of the problem here that I'm either A, not a gracious giver, or B, that I'm not a grateful receiver. Do I need to make it more simple? I don't know how. But that is a good test that you can give to yourself at any time. Is my attitude at work suffering right now? Is my inner man's response to what I have to do suffering? Then ask this question. Am I at this moment being a gracious giver? Am I giving without expecting something back? Am I giving without demanding something in return? Or is it possible that I haven't been a thankful receiver? Remember what we talked about in terms of being thankful receivers. That one of the reasons that some of us don't experience job satisfaction is because why? We covered this last week. Because someone else has not been a grateful receiver. Instead, they've just been a taker. Well, if that's true, then what's my role? Whenever I am the recipient of something, even if it's the assistance from a coworker or somebody else's support, or maybe it's something to do with a customer, we're all customers, we're all downstream recipients of other people's giving, whether gracious or not. So one of the things that I have to be out in my world is I have to be a thankful or a grateful receiver. All right, so that was the provider portion of work. There were three other components to our work. Anybody?
Profit creation.
What's that?
Profit creation.
Well, that's, yes, we talked about prophet and priest last week. The three other components were most men, another intersecting point is marriage. That in most men's life, one of the components of a comprehensive understanding of work is I am a provider, but I'm also a husband. And then I am a father, I'm the head of a household. And then finally, last week we looked at the fourth component, which was citizenship. That it's not enough for me to say, we have ours, you have to figure out how to get yours in the family context, or in the singular context, I have mine, you have to figure out how to get yours. That as citizens of God's kingdom, that we are our brother's keepers, and we have a responsibility to look out for the best interest of those around us. So those are the four components of work. Provider, husband for most men, father for most men who are husbands, and finally, even if we're not those two, citizen of the kingdom of heaven and everything that that entails. Is there anybody that didn't get last week's handout? I guess that would be a few of you. I gave two. All right, tell you what you do. If you need last week's handout and you would... I have a couple of them here yet. I will send these two around. Actually, I have one apparently that's a complete one. So there you go. If you didn't get one, remind me afterwards and I'll get you something emailed. All right, so moving on to today, we said that if we're going to look at things through the mind of a person who would have been from biblical times, that most of these people divided their work not into the various compartments that we do, where I have a job, and then I have a home, and then I have recreation, and I have social activities and all that. Typically, most people, and a scriptural understanding, is sort of dividing your work or dividing your life between what you do as an overall expression of work and then rest. So work and Sabbath. Those are the two divisions. We're going to look at it that way, see if we can learn anything today that's instructive as far as Sabbath. All right, so when you hear that word, just a couple of off-the-cuff reflections, observations. When you hear the word Sabbath, what goes through your mind?
Day of rest.
Day of rest? Anybody else?
Keep it holy.
Keep it holy? Okay, these are good Bible answers. Does the word connect with you? Do you say, oh, the Sabbath is coming? Could be. We'll look at that. Do we generally look at it as a good thing or not?
If we were honest, we'd say it's a weekday that we don't get enough done. That's the way it is when we're working full time.
Okay. And how does that work for most of us? Doesn't, rarely. Okay. So most of us would have to admit that there's a little bit of everyday life spills over into that one day of the week that we designate as different. And I want to emphasize this, designate as different. So here's what we're going to start with, and this is going to seem a little bit peculiar. We're going to start with two scriptures. They're going to be what I'll call bookends. And we're going to have to, each of us, in our own lives, find some harmony between these two bookends. So the first one, we're going to turn over to Exodus, the 31st chapter. When I'm done reading this section, please don't all stand up and walk out in unison because you're frustrated. And the Lord said to Moses, and incidentally, this address here, the Lord talking to Moses, this is the final words that God says to Moses while he's on the mountain, meeting with God, giving him the tablets that are the Ten Commandments, we call the Ten Commandments, for the first time. So if you were to read on ahead, what you would find out is while Moses is receiving this final address from God, the gang down in the valley, They've decided that Moses may not return, so they're doing the whole golden calf thing, feasting, having a festival, doing all that other stuff that usually goes along with feasting and festivals. So you can just fill in the blanks and figure out what's happening down in the valley. Meanwhile, God and Moses are having this conversation up on the mountain. And the Lord said to Moses, "You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths." And keep in mind, everything that has gone before this, he's just had this extended conversation and said, these are the important things that I want my people to do. And then he says, and I'm going to repeat it, "And the Lord said to Moses, you are to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all, you are to keep my Sabbaths. For this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord and that I sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you. Everyone who profanes it shall be put to death." Well, that's encouraging news. "Whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath shall be put to death." Just in case, Moses, you didn't hear me the first time, let me repeat that again. "Whoever does any work on the Sabbath shall be put to death. Therefore the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh he rested and was refreshed. He gave to Moses, when he had finished speaking with him on Mount Sinai, the two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone, written with the finger of God." Okay, so had Moses not come down off the mountain and encountered, you know, the whole calf thing and feasting and festivalizing and all that, this would have been the final thing ringing in his ears as he left the mountain. "And if the people do not obey the Sabbath, stone them." All right. Have you ever felt that way? Did you perhaps grow up in a culture, in a church culture, if you grew up in a church culture, where Sabbath was something that was strictly adhered to? And keep in mind, it wasn't even Saturday. It was Sunday. It was the Christian version of Sabbath. Well, I mean, yes, there's one a week. There's certainly other festival days. We're not observing them all. The question, why? Because we're not under obligation to observe all of them any longer. We'll get into that.
If I have not come to change the law, I just come to fulfill it, does that mean everything in the Old Testament goes out with it?
No, it doesn't mean everything. There's a difference between ceremonial law and civil law. In giving the law, God gave both civil law and ceremonial law. Wow, that's a whole other day's discussion, which we don't have time to have now. Let me talk to Bob for a moment. Do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was just going to say that growing up, my dad wouldn't let me go to the movies on Sunday.
There you go.
TV before church. I probably didn't even turn the TV on until like the Ed Sullivan Show came on in the evening or something. But, you know, other than that, you know, there was no strict observance of the Sabbath in terms of no work. But we never cut the lawn on a Sunday, you know, stuff like that.
Okay, so you grew up and experienced that sort of culture where there were a set of, we'll almost call them taboos. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be the... Do you have your hand in just a moment? If you happen to be one of the ones in your church situation that broke that, how did people look at you?
Oh, they looked down on you.
Okay.
Yeah. You had disappointed them.
Okay, you had disappointed them. What did you feel?
Judgment.
There you go, judgment. And what would their... Okay, so now move inside that. You're on the inside looking out. Now you see somebody else out mowing their lawn. And what were your thoughts?
Usually my thoughts are that I can't hear the race as well. And I wish I would get a muffler. Scott, you should hear how loud this mower is. It's unbelievable.
Okay, you've just taken us off. You know, okay, we're going to park your car and we're going to get to Chris now. Go ahead.
What about when you work? You have to work someday.
Okay. We're coming to that. Remember, I just asked you a simple question. What are your first impressions? Okay? And how does this make you feel? What was the culture of then? Now we're going to move forward. Okay, I don't want to get distracted. But you know what? We're already proving the point that I haven't even made. That we are extremely, even to this day, legalistic about how we deal with this because we don't understand it. That's the first big takeaway. We don't understand Sabbath, so we have a lot of hang-ups about it, and we start to figure out how we can obey it. All right, let's turn over to Romans.
The most important thing is we got to remember what Yahshua said about that, right? What Yahshua said about that. Yahshua said, hey, if you're, would you look for a lost sheep?
Right, okay, and we will get to that. All right, so now, Romans, the 14th chapter. As for the one who is weak in his faith, welcome him. But do not quarrel over opinions. One person believes he may eat anything, while a weak person eats only vegetables. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains, and let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats. For God has welcomed him. Who are you to pass judgment on the servant of another? It is before his own master that he stands or falls. And he will be upheld, for the Lord is able to make him stand. And now we get into the more relevant part to what we're talking about right now. One person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God. While the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. For none of us lives to himself, and none of us dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ died and lived again, that he might be Lord both of the dead and the living. Why do you pass judgment on your brother? Or why do you despise your brother? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. All right, so we have the bookend on the left. He who does not observe the Sabbath, let him be put to death. We have the bookend on the right that says each one has to determine the importance of the day and esteem it. And I believe that Paul literally has not only special Jewish holy days, the kind of thing that you're talking about here, but even, look at this, in day-to-day life, one person esteems one day better than another. What's he saying?
It's all wrong.
I think he's talking about different Samaritans, pagans. He's referring to all people.
He's talking to all people, and look at who he's directing this letter to. He's directing this letter into a people who had no past experience with Sabbath. To them, this whole idea is foreign. To them, they live in a 24/7 culture, just the same as we today do. And so for Paul to say all of a sudden to a culture, to a time that's going all the time, we're just going to pause for one day of the week. What's he asking for? Complete social upheaval. So if you are the Christians in this culture and you are commanded to observe one day as special and set apart from the others, and suppose you're a slave, what do? Think about that. You're a slave. You're under obligation to your master. You work in a 7-day-a-week society. And your master's not really particularly interested in your newfound faith, nor your newfound allegiance. And so when you stand up and say, we'll put it in modern day terms, well, I found Jesus and therefore I'm going to set a day apart, your master's response is?
Fired?
Fired is it? That's all? To death? Or We're going to give your master the benefit of the doubt. We're going to say that he's a nice master, like Dave's master apparently was, and he's just going to dismiss him. So how does that go for your whole family? You didn't just turn to the classifieds then and look for more work. So there's a major disruption. And what would that, what would the reflection have been on believers if all of a sudden everyone who is a believer in that culture said, we're not going to work anymore? What would they have been perceived as being?
Hippies.
Hippies? Okay.
Lazy.
Rebellious. Uncooperative. Certainly not the ideal that would invite other people into that. He's just saying, you have to make up your mind based on your situation and your circumstances as to what's right. The law commands, I'll be right back to you, the law commands things of us, grace asks things of us and expects more in this way. Which is easier? For someone else to tell you you have to and therefore you don't have to make the decision, or for you to be called to make the choice yourself? If it's a tough choice, which would you rather? Sometimes it's easier to let someone else make the choice for you, because then you can say, it wasn't my doing, I had to do this. But if I have to personally take that stand, then I am responsible for the choice that I make. And that choice, according to Paul, is I make this choice based on how I choose to honor God in that moment. Mike.
I was going to say it faithfully, because God's your faith. You believe. Like I thought I heard the word, that's what we're supposed to do.
So what you're saying is we'll be held accountable for our decisions.
We'll be held accountable for our own decisions based on how we perceive we should honor God.
And the Sabbath.
And do we have, is it within our power to do this? So to speak to your question, if my job requires that I work, do I choose to be, we'll say, rebellious, uncooperative? Do I choose to bring a bad reputation to the name of God because I become one of those weirdos that insists on my way and refuses to do something? Or do I perhaps bring honor to God? And I have to make that choice myself. Do I bring honor to God by saying, okay, in this case, I will? Everybody makes a different decision. This is important.
What if you go to your boss and you say, I don't like...
Ah, see, now you're asking me to make your decision for you. There you go. You want to live under the law. No. Okay. Sorry.
To him, he said, I didn't want to work on Sunday because I believe that I shouldn't work on the Sabbath. Now, and he says, well, then it's either go find another job or not. So now...
Now you have to make your own call there. Yes.
I don't know if I'm being convicted or what, but I usually pay bills Sunday.
Okay.
Because... day where I have the time.
Okay.
If I could make it another day, should I?
What do you think? So there you go, asking me to be your law again. You just didn't hear what I said.
Thank you.
There you go. Then that's where it should stop. You should be thinking and not dragging me into making me your lawmaker. Art, I just want you to know, Judge Judy has a much nicer ring than Judge Glenn, so we're just going to let her have the show and we're going to move on. All right. So that's the first principle. Does everyone feel that now? That you and I are not to live under anyone else's judgment because of the way we manage. And incidentally, Sunday is not the Sabbath. So if we're going to be literalists, we're not observing the strict Jewish Sabbath, but that doesn't mean that a principle of Sabbath does not and should not apply to our lives. So now we're going to move into the next thing. Let's look at, in a very practical sense, what's a sabbatical? Okay. One at a time now. Okay, a vacation. I want a comprehensive statement. Dave gave us a two-word comprehensive statement that expressed. Okay. Okay, it's a leave of absence. Go ahead. It is a paid time off. Is it more than that? Okay, so you're getting, there we go, we're getting to a more comprehensive understanding of it. A sabbatical in terms, and who typically, anyone who's in the education field may, after a period of years, and I this statement here in bold, the purpose of a sabbatical leave was taken right from one college's website. It was information for anyone from that university considering taking a sabbatical. What were some of the expectations or requirements? The purpose of a sabbatical leave is to provide a period of time for study, or, and I think that should be research. I don't know. Again, this was copied. The objective of which is to enable recipients to increase their usefulness in their work. So that's very helpful in understanding right there. A leave with pay, sabbatical, is a privilege which may be granted to an individual who has demonstrated, preferably by published or otherwise recognized work, substantial ability in scholarship, research, and training, or other creative work. So here's the first principle. In order to appreciate a Sabbath, what was necessary, a sabbatical, what do you have to do first?
Study the work.
If you're not working, then you don't need a Sabbath. So the first principle of Sabbath is, if you're not throwing yourself wholeheartedly into what you do for the other 6 days of the week, you can't really fully appreciate Sabbath. That's principle number one. What? You're looking at provider. That's why we began with a comprehensive understanding of what work is. What is our comprehensive understanding of work? It is more than being providers. When you and I hear the word work, I said this on the first week when we talked about work, when you and I today hear the word work, we think J-O-B. Work as it's understood in the scriptures is more than J-O-B. J-O-B is the provider component of work. Our work is how we invest in our relationships. Our work is how we invest in our families and care for them. Provide and protect for them. Emotionally, intellectually, and physically. Our work is being our neighbor's keeper. Let's turn back to, we're apparently struggling with this, so let's turn back to Genesis. We're going to take this a little bit out of order. We're going to go to Genesis, the second chapter. Randall, don't let Bob rub off on you. Just because Bob is a disruptive influence doesn't mean you have to be one also. I'm just saying. Yes, that's what I'm worried about. And you, make sure that you don't blackmail him into doing what you want him to do just because he needs a ride home, okay? That's not fair.
You're the only one under blackmail.
Chapter 2, the first verse, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the hosts of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation." In the Jewish mindset, things that contribute to creation are considered work. If you look at a lot of Jewish texts, there will be literally lists of those things that constitute work. Typically, relational interaction is never considered work. Right? It's how the rabbi is able to be in synagogue and teach and do all that, and he is not breaking his own Sabbath. You understand what I'm saying? Because it's considered relational in nature. All right. So the cyclical principle of Sabbath, work readies me for Sabbath. Yes, that's a typo there. Work readies me for Sabbath. Sabbath grounds me for work. All right, so here is a good way to tell if you are observing a time of Sabbath. And don't get hung up on a day of the week or a specific practice. Are you anxious and eager to return to your work based on what you have done on the day that you spend away from your work? Does what you do on the one day prepare you for the sixth? Or do you wake up on the first day and say, That's just a reflective question. What you do on that one day should help to re-energize and equip you for the work that you have to do. And what you do for the 6 days should make you look forward to a time of refreshment. So if you are not pouring yourself wholeheartedly into what you do the other 6 days, can you look back on the seventh and celebrate? God does His work and He's then able to look back and say, it was good, it was very good. And I can now look at that with a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment and appreciation. So the question is, can you and I look at what we have done over the last 6 days and say, it is good, I have given my all, it is the best that I could have done. If I'm in the middle of the hunt, I can't do that. So that seventh day provides us the opportunity to look at the other 6 days and say, well, maybe that wasn't as good. Maybe I could have done that better. I'm not experiencing a joy in what I have done. Does all that make sense? All right, principle number two. Oh, well, let's fill in the blanks that I apparently neglected to give you. Sabbath can be understood as a time of renewal and refreshment. Principle number two, Sabbath gives dignity to my work. So I work for more than survival. Why do you work? Because you have to? Or because you want to? Is that why you wake up every morning to work? Okay. Okay. All right. You work because you have to. Why do we all work? Huh?
We want stuff.
Oh, there you go. Now we're getting honest because we want stuff. And then we take the 6 day to build garages to hold the stuff that we... Right? And then we take the 7th day to go play with the stuff. All right. So stuff is really the driving force of our life. Okay, that's the gospel according to the 20th and 21st century at least. Anyway. And people need jobs, right? So it's our obligation to buy stuff, otherwise other people wouldn't work. In case your 21st century theology was incomplete, I wanted to help you be at peace with that.
Very good one.
Okay.
Stuff. Or to provide.
The question, though, is that the only reason? Do you understand how Sabbath gives dignity to work? Because Sabbath says, I can stop working. Sabbath says, I choose to work. Yes, I may need to work, but I also choose to work. You know the old win the lottery question? What would you do the day after you won the lottery? Would you continue to work? Now, so you're still looking at work as J-O-B. Would you still continue to work if you didn't have to?
How much did I win?
That's what I just said.
Oh, I don't know. Enough for you to live comfortably for the rest of your life. Huh? It depends. Yes, that's the point. It depends on where your heart is. But is Sabbath informing how you work and the way you work? This is part of what we do on that day, is we reflect. What can I contribute? What am I contributing? How might I contribute differently? And for those of us who feel compelled to work 7 days a week, or feel driven to work 7 days a week, or feel guilty whenever we sit down, that poses a question all its own. Why do I feel that compulsion to work 7 days a week? Okay. There's drugs for that. And you can buy them the other 6 days of the week.
Fear of man complex?
There's many reasons. I don't know. I'm asking a question. It's up to each of us. Remember I said it's not my job to tell you what to do about Sabbath keeping. My job is to raise points for consideration. And remember here, why are we here? Because we are, and don't say not all there either. No, we're here because we're in a spiritual coaching series, and so the idea is that we're storing these things in ourselves so that we can help other people with these things.
Seriously,
from you, and it's seriously in the same sentence.
This is serious.
Okay.
It seems to me that this first principle is relying on the word of the college website. I don't see where Sabbath is a reflection of my work. I mean, in Exodus 31, God said, you know, keep it holy that you may know I'm God. He didn't say, go back and think about the tents that you've made, and, you know. This seems to be like, don't even think about your work, and I'm not sure.
The principle number one is not connected to the point above it.
Okay.
The sabbatical idea, though, helps us to see that really this does infiltrate all of society, because you and I tend to think that Sabbath is a specifically religious thing. When we actually get into the Ten Commandments, what I hope to show everybody is that Sabbath is primarily not a religious observance. Now, that's going to surprise some of you, but it's really not.
All right, so sorry, I was confusing sabbatical.
No, but it gives us a fuller understanding of the rich potential that exists in Sabbath. If you understand what I'm saying there. All right, principle number three. We're never going to move on. Rest is itself a spiritual activity. So what do we say that our inner man is, our spiritual man is? What is our spiritual life? That would be the better question. What is my spiritual life? There you go. You haven't even been here for two-thirds of this material, and you remember that. It is how my inner man responds to everything around me. In that sense, rest is a response. Rest says that I can let that be at peace. I can look at something and not feel compelled to do something about it at that moment. I can be at peace with my current contribution. Are you at peace with setting time apart? This is a struggle for some people. Some people really can't even, to come back to your vacation thought, have you ever been on vacation but really not? Huh? And has your mind ever been elsewhere? This is what I'm saying. It's like sometimes we're still engaged. If I don't completely disconnect, then maybe I'm not returning life to myself so that I can completely re-energize.
Some people find rest in things they do. So, I mean, I think maybe that's where we're getting confused. Somebody would get confused because you just don't cut off, sit down for nothing. Everybody's busy doing something. So, like, when I get done my job and go home and work around the house and do stuff, that to me is rest. You know, because I'm doing something with the family and stuff like that. That's rest.
Okay. And that's where... And that's where, at this point, as uncomfortable as some people may be with it, that's where we apply that Romans text and we say, I cannot be your judge of what you find to be a way of
relaxing,
relating to God, and restoring yourself. But there is spiritual principle in this, so we can't just be... I want you to understand, Sabbath is not just rest. It is rest, but it is rest and some. And we'll get into the and some. All right, but the four principles here under this, rest is itself a spiritual activity that I cease. So that means that even in the middle of doing something, I may have to stop. We all like to have jobs that or work that just ends and we can have rest at the end of the work, but that isn't always possible. If the project that you're working on is 3 years long and you're not going to rest until it's done, you're going to be a very weary person. So part of a Sabbath principle is understanding that even with incompleted things in my life, I disconnect from them. If you are fortunate enough, or maybe unfortunate enough, depending on how you look at it, to have work that says that at the end of the week it's done, you don't have to give any thought to it. When you go in on Monday, it'll be something completely new. Then that's easy to be separated from it because your work has come to an end, we'll say on Friday, if we're looking at a typical work day. But if your project is ongoing and it's going to be 2 or 3 years in the making, then you have to force yourself to cease from something even though there is more of it to do. All right. At times it is an end. It is always rest, and it does require you to separate yourself from it in some way, whatever that separation is. It can be a mental separation. Maybe you need a physical separation. If you're the kind of person that if you are in the same room as the project and you have that compulsion, that OCD thing, and you're going to just start doing again if you haven't, then maybe you need to separate yourself from that place where the work is done. You having problems, Justin?
No.
Okay. You feeling convicted?
No.
Okay. All right. Principle number four, Sabbath is a command. So let's take a look at some of these commands. We've already looked at the Genesis text. So let's take a look at the Exodus one, the first one, 20, 8 through 11. I doubt very much that we're going to get through all of these, so they're there for you to read later, the ones that we don't get through. All right, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy. Okay, so what else do you see there? Why?
Because God said so.
Okay, because God's...
Because God set an example for us.
Okay, because God set an example for us, but also because what is our tendency as greedy people? Okay, well, I'll rest. But what about my slave over here? What about that guy? Or could I get somebody over there to do some work for me? Could I make a few bucks on somebody else's effort? I mean, I'm going to be devout and I'm going to observe the Sabbath. But can I game this system somehow so that I can still extract something for myself even while I pretend to observe the Sabbath? So that's the one thing. All right, so you've all seen this idea that the Ten Commandments are both vertical, that is my relationship with God, and they also address my relationship with other humanity. If you look at this command of the Sabbath is actually an intersection. The Sabbath is that one point where my relationship with God and my relationship with man intersect clearly. So I observe the Sabbath in honor to God, and we're going to talk about how this honors God when I do observe the Sabbath later on. But also, for those that are in my employ, for those that are in my control, I give them the liberty of observing a time of rest also. So if I'm not willing to give them the opportunity to be at rest, then I've not completely honored the Sabbath. Later on, it goes into more detail. So let's turn over. As a matter of fact, let's do that right now. Maybe you want to keep your finger in that Exodus one, and let's turn over to Deuteronomy. So Deuteronomy, as we've seen a couple of times already, is Moses' summation. It's a collection of speeches and presentations that Moses gives, maybe over a period of weeks, maybe during a few days. He gives them to the second generation. It's the people, the younger people, that came out of Egypt, but they really weren't in control. They weren't the decision makers at the time that they came out of Egypt. They followed their father's leading. So their fathers rebelled. God said, "You guys aren't going into the promised land." So now, years later, right when they're ready, just about ready to cross over, Moses is not going to be in command, and he gives these series of addresses and reminders because now the generation that was the kids and weren't in charge are now the generation that is in charge, and he has to affirm to them what was taught to their fathers before them. All right, so we'll start at the beginning, I guess, of chapter 5. Just to get a feel for that. And Moses summoned all of Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes, the rules that I speak in your hearing today. And you shall learn them and be careful to do them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. Not with our fathers did the Lord make this covenant, but with us, who are all of us here alive today." So in that, you see that clear understanding. There's some of us who are no longer with us anymore. The covenant was made with them, but they chose to break the covenant. And now we are a new generation, and we have to decide. That's a critical thing. The last generation decided one way. It didn't go well for them. You have to decide now. "I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me." Okay, and then he goes through these commandments. Get down to verse number 12. "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy." And it sounds like we're just going to have a repeat of the same thing as was delivered in Exodus. "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor, do all your work. But on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You, or your sons, or your daughters, or your male servant, or your female servant, or your ox, or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates." This is very comprehensive. This is God saying, even your animals need a rest. It's interesting. "That your male and your female servant may rest as well. You shall remember that," and this is all new ground here, he's reminding them of. "You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. The Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." What is he saying? By implication, you were a slave. What? How often would a slave have worked? All the time. At his master's beck and call, whenever that was, any time of any day of the week. "Now you serve me," God says. "You have a choice. I'm giving you the choice. When I am your Lord and Master, you only have to work 6 days a week. You do not have to. I am giving you the gift of a day for rest, reflection, and relationship. Now, what happens if we choose not to accept that gift? What's he saying? Doesn't say it in words. He says it by implication. We return to slavery if we choose to return to working 7 days a week. And I become my own master as well as my own slave, and I encumber and enslave myself to the commitment to work 7 days a week. Have you ever felt trapped in your own life?
Did Moses soften that commandment?
How do you mean that?
God said you're dead. Okay, Moses said, "Now you go back to slavery."
That's an interesting question. There's a way that I like to explain that, and I'm not sure that it will satisfy everyone here. It probably won't satisfy you, being the contentious sort that you are, but we'll give it a try anyway. Here is my theory on much of this harshness, and everyone has questions about the harshness of the commands of God as they're delivered in Exodus and even throughout these books. What do you suppose it was like to be under the rule of Pharaoh? Pharaoh was authoritative. Pharaoh was bold. Pharaoh was a commanding leader. And those who led for him, all of those who worked under him and were his co-leaders, I suppose that they were all the same. Would the people of Israel have thought of God as a great God had he been, we'll say, a milquetoast sort of God and said, gee guys, it would really be nice if you would? You see, they left a land of power, authority, and dignity where one man ruled with an iron fist and nothing but what he said went.
And demanded worship.
Were they now going to go and serve a lesser, inferior? Here was a mortal that stood and said, I am God. Were they now going to serve someone lesser? And my theory is that God presents himself as forceful and authoritative, not because that is all that he is, but because in that way he commands the respect of people, because at that time the people were not really acquainted with him. So that is my theory on why it seems as if the law is so authoritative and forceful, is that God needs to present himself as that, because they're coming out of that sort of a situation. Does that satisfy all your answer or your questions? Probably not, but that's my theory on it. All right. So what additional things do we see here? I love the way he says this, and let's look at this for just a moment. You shall not labor, or 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work. Why make that distinction? 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work. When you hear the word labor, what do you think of?
You know, knowing some Jewish people, I know that what they do is they work almost extra hard, like the fifth and sixth day, so that on the seventh day they can as the best as they can to keep this up.
They don't need more to drop.
Yeah. That's what I find, you know, is prepare for the Sabbath.
Okay.
In addition to your work.
I think one thing for certain that we're saying is it possible for me to convince myself, well, because it's not really physical work, it would be okay. It makes a distinction between labor and work. Is there work that you do with your mind? As we're saying, completely disengage. It's not just your physical toil. Whatever you do that has to do with your acts of creativity and expression and all that, things like we said, that Jewish list of things that are acts of creation. Whatever you're doing, whether it's physical or mental, you have 6 days of the week to do that. And on the seventh day, separate from it. All right. The Sabbath is a gift, principle number five, that we give to others when we don't expect them to work. And we see that in that command. Principle number six, here's where we get personal again. The Sabbath gives us a chance to demonstrate trust. Have you ever said, I have to work? No?
It has to be done.
I need to get this work done. I need to get this done. I need to work this overtime. I have a chance to work this extra. I'm going to work this. If you and I have to work 7 days a week, how much trust do we have in God? Now, I know that sounds so quaint and that sounds so, I don't know, 17th century or something.
This is the only day I have to get to line up. Or to wash
Are you saying that for yourself? Or are you... Okay, I can't... Remember, it is not my place to be your judge. That is your decision. My job is to lead you to the water. It's your job to decide how much of it you drink and how you drink it.
What theory of blessing is more? If you take that drink and you have more desire to do it after you get that breath.
So you're saying that the rest equips you to
do more? Because
I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true.
Right.
I think that what happens, yeah, we cannot give our all if we're constantly giving. That just makes perfect sense. And in that process, you gradually have you ever worked 7 days a week for a long time? And you watch yourself gradually wind down and wind down and wind down. And pretty soon you're getting less done in 7 than you used to get in 4. But you're still at it. There is definitely an observable performance difference over a period of time. There's an observable creativity difference if your work is mental, when you're constantly pursuing. So, we're going to look at this in a slightly different way so that maybe we understand Sabbath in a slightly different way. So, if we look at, and I don't know where this fits into the notes because I have my side notes here at the bottom. Let's look at the 6 days of the week that we work. Whatever those 6 days are, or however you practice Sabbath. And I'm trying to evade a literalist interpretation here so that you give yourself some margin for how you practice Sabbath. But in 6 days, we build the house of our life. And everything that is the house of our life and living. But what fool would build a house and never live in it? Just think about that. Sabbath is the gift that God gives us of being able to live in the life that we have built. And if we never take the time to live in the life that we've built, what joy is there in life? And so in that, God gives us, it's a gift. He says, I'm going to care for you, I'm going to watch out for you, I want you to set apart a time to enjoy me, to enjoy each other, to enjoy the life that you have built, because if you never enjoy the life that you have built, your life seems very empty. So I don't know if that's a useful illustration that may help you to understand that a little bit. And I think in keeping with what God is saying, if we never take time to really enjoy this relationship that we have with God, then what was the purpose of all of the work that God did in making the relationship possible? So if we never spend time in the relationship, did we really have the relationship? It's kind of like the guy, maybe you're not that guy. It sounds like the Helzberg Diamond commercial, doesn't it? If you don't know what that is, never mind. But anyway, I mean, some guys, that they're all about giving their wives stuff, but they never take the time to enjoy their wife. And then there's some guys who say, well, I'd rather give my wife stuff because that way I don't have to be around her. But that's not the point. No, it's not enough to do things for somebody. Sometimes what's lacking or what's wanting is just the being with them. And that's what they want. So, build the house? Yeah. Do your work? Yes. Build your life? Yes. But you need to spend some time living in that life that you've built then. All right, principle number 7.
Is saving a day of Sabbath a day of work?
Is what?
Is saving a day for Sabbath work? Not like works. Works are a day.
Is it works? No, I don't think it is at all. What are you doing?
You're saving, you're purposely saving a day. That is something I did. I saved a day. That is a work. I look God, I saved a day for you.
You're setting a day apart. First off, all you're doing is giving back to God. It's not even yours to begin with. Your life is God's, and your life is in God's hands. So what you're simply saying is, I'm going to not do for a day, or a part of a day, or whatever it is that you choose to do as your practice of Sabbath.
But so as to glorify the temple of God, which is me.
So as to what?
Give the temple of God a rest.
Okay, well, that's another great way to look at it. If each of us is the temple of God, then we are giving the temple of God its due rest. That's an interesting thought. Okay, where in the world was I? Oh, principle number 7. Okay, we've talked about this one already. When we work, we become slaves to our survival. Sabbath frees us from the tyranny of self-imposed slavery. Principle number 8 we have not addressed. This is another important one. And this is from God's perspective. You and I maybe don't appreciate this. Sabbath levels the social field. Think about this. Who in ancient culture would have had the luxury of resting? The higher ups. Why? They were the boss and they could tell other people to do the work. If work needed to be done 7 days a week, they didn't have to do it. So God says, in this, you are all equals. There's not those who have to work all the time and those who don't have to work. There's not those who are better and elite and those who are not. God levels the social playing field when he says everyone is entitled to, everyone deserves to experience this rest. That is very different from rule under Pharaoh. That is very different from rule under Rome. And if you think about this, even in our own society, who is more prone to work extra jobs? The wealthy or the poor? Did you say the have-nots? Sure. Those are the ones who are most likely to have to work extra hours, to work 7 days a week, to work multiple jobs. And God is saying, in my economy, in my kingdom, everyone deserves rest, not just those who have more money. Principle number 9, and this is one that we struggle with. We've talked about it indirectly, but let's just look at it head on. The Sabbath is for us. It is God's gift to us. It is not our gift to God. It is God saying, take this time apart. But we think we don't need it, or we think that, I don't know, maybe we don't deserve it, whatever it is. So what I want you to do is turn over with me to Mark, the 2nd chapter. We're going to see part of what the Sabbath is about. If you read through the 4 Gospels, you'll see Jesus get hammered again and again because he does what people feel is breaking the Sabbath. So we've moved from commandments to observe the Sabbath to a time when people ignored the Sabbath, and now we're back to a time here at first century where we've got a group of people that is insanely controlling about the Sabbath. So here comes Jesus. Let me see where I want to start here. Mark 2:23. One Sabbath he was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain, and the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.'" That is Jesus saying that, but using what David did as an example of how the Sabbath can be misused and misapplied. All right, now, so he's saying the Sabbath is God's gift to you. It's not to be over-legalized. It's not to be used. Well, what are they doing? They're using it as a form of judgment. They're doing exactly what we talked about. They're hung up on a collection of legalistic rules so that they can point to somebody else and say, "Well, you're not as good as I am because look at that activity that you're doing on the Sabbath." And Jesus says, "Don't do that. Are you treating that like a gift, or are you treating it like a club now to beat people with?
I always like how he starts out with having red.
Right.
Because he knows they have.
Now let's turn over to John 5. This is the other complementary text to this that I want to look at. I think what Jesus is doing is, let's remember who's saying this. Jesus is saying this, and he's saying the priest sanctioned giving David the bread. The bread was intended to be devoted to God. And yet in a time of need, remember that these guys are walking, they're just grabbing something to eat. So it's very definitely an eating principle at this point. And so he's saying, just the same as these guys were hungry, and they weren't about to starve simply because they would not obey some strict religious thing. He says, all of the rules, all of the law, this is it in a nutshell. All of the rules and all of the laws that I give you are for your own health and good and the betterment of everyone. Don't turn it into rules and that will strangle you. Don't turn what is good for you into something that will destroy your life. And he's pointing to these guys and he's saying, you've turned what was intended as a gift from me to all of you, the law to help you to live functionally and holy, and I mean holy as in the whole person, not WH, not age. And you've turned it into this stranglehold where you persecute people over the law that I intended to give life. So I don't know if that's a clear explanation or not. This actually ties in with this. John 5th chapter. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there, he knew that he had already been there a long time, and he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" And the sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me." So if you've heard the story before, you understand the idea that every time the pool was stirred, they felt that angels stirred the water, and that every time that happened, that one person and only one person could get a healing. The first person in the water gets the healing. Everybody else, too bad for you. Maybe come back next week. Maybe there'll be another stirring of the water. And so this guy is saying, you don't understand, I'd like to be, but I am so incapacitated that somebody always beats me there. So by this time, he's almost resigned to this. It's like, what's the point? Somebody always beats me at this. I'll never get a healing. So I'm just going to be here in this miserable, deplorable state for the rest of my life. While I'm going down the steps, another beats me, gets down there before me. And Jesus said to him, "Get up, take up your bed and walk." And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now that day was Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed." All right, so let's stop. How many years has the guy been there at the pool? He's been there a long time. Do you think in 38 years of passing by this guy, they knew who he was? What do you think? Oh, look, there's the bum. Ah, there's the bum. I see the bum. 38 years of passing by the bum. Now all of a sudden, one day, the bum is carrying his bed mat. And what do they say? 38 years of passing by this guy who cannot walk. What's their first comment to him? Can't do that. How dare you walk? And how dare you walk carrying your bed on the Sabbath? Not, woohoo, you're healed. Nice job. How'd that happen? Tell me about that. It's, can't do that. Yes. What's the point that's being made here? I mean, apart from the healing, and the healing is its own story, and there's a ton of stories about that, but what is the attitude of these people?
That they're more powerful.
Not only that they're more powerful, they're more concerned with whether this law has been obeyed than whether the man has been made whole. Here's a man who for 38 years has not been whole. He's never been able to experience life to the full, and Jesus gives him life to the full. And their first thought is, hey, maybe Jesus made you whole, but you're going to get into lockstep with our commands starting now. Now it was the Sabbath, so the Jews said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed. But he answered them, the man who healed me, that man said to me, take up your bed and walk. So here's this guy, and he says, I don't want to be in the middle of this firestorm. The reason I'm not obeying the Sabbath is it's his fault. And he just made me walk. So you think I'm going to... Yeah, you think I'm going to disobey him? He just told me to get up and take my bed and go. What if I didn't? Maybe he would have made me unable to walk again. So here is the guy, and this guy is like all of us. Remember how I started this? It is each of our choice to choose how we are going to practice Sabbath. Not to live under the condemnation of others who would like to choose the way that we will observe Sabbath, but also we have to be willing to make the choice. And here is this guy living under the stranglehold of the law, and what is his first act as a free man? To try to evade having to accept responsibility for a choice. Jesus made me do it. Now that's a rare phrase, but yeah, it's not my fault. Jesus made me do it. Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, as there was a crowd in the place. And afterward Jesus found him in the temple and said, see, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. And this is why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered, and this is the critical phrase here, my Father is working until now, and I am working. Now that's a pretty startling phrase. What's he saying? That even on the Sabbath, he's saying, God is working. So what's the difference between that kind of work and the kind of work that God is telling us not to do? I mean, it's very clear. It's right there. Even, and this is what he says to justify working on the Sabbath.
Is this the relational verse?
It's a relational thing. The Sabbath is about completing relationship. And when I look at another individual and I pass by them and ignore their need and their brokenness, at that moment they're not relationally whole, and I am putting in the I will not help you. I will put the rule of life before the relationship of life.
That would be
I don't know what day that happened, but that's a great example. That's another good example of that. So there's an example. Did everybody hear what he said? That the Levites who walk by the Samaritan who's injured on the side of the road, and they walk by him in part because if they touch this guy, they're going to become ceremonially unclean and they're not going to be able to fulfill their responsibilities. So they would rather walk by a guy and let him potentially die then risk defiling a law and becoming impure and therefore not be able to do the good thing that they were supposed to do. So that's another great example of that very same thing. All right. So principle number 10, we're seeing the very same idea. Rest is not legalistic. Does anybody have any comments while we turn over to... I think we're going to turn to Isaiah. Anybody have any comments?
What's the next? This principle is similar for the principle of you need to be
in the world but not of the world, in other words, reach people, right? Because if a non-Christian calls you on Sunday and says, hey, I have this need, and you say, well, it's my Sabbath, I can't help you, what do you say, right? You ought to consider, I'm not telling anybody what to do, you ought to consider helping that person because that's the relational aspect of ministry to that non-Christian. Maybe more important than what you were
going to
do on the Sabbath.
And I think even more, yes, everything that you've said is true, but I don't even think we make the artificial divide believer or not believer. We say, if your neighbor, well, who's your neighbor? We don't know if our neighbor is believer or not believer. If your neighbor, or remember that proverb, if your neighbor's ox? It's not even only if your neighbor, but if your neighbor's ox is in the ditch or whatever. You're going to walk by that? No. Help. I'm sorry, I'm going to take you on a little detour. I told you you'd go to Isaiah, but you can stay in Isaiah. I'm going to read out of Luke, because apparently I can't follow my own notes. I just got to get myself refocused on. Here we go. Okay, now I know where we're going. All right. So Jesus has had a very stressful time. He sent his followers out. He sent them out to teach, to preach, to heal, and they come back. And they're tired. And so we pick up the story here. Jesus is anxious to hear about this. Not only are they tired from their trip away, but Jesus has just received the rather vexing news that John the Baptist has been killed. So he is in inner turmoil. His gang is tired. He would like to meet with them. He would like to have some relational downtime. He would like to have what I'll call a period of Sabbath. Even though it may not have been on the Sabbath day, he is hungry for a time of relational downtime. On their return, the apostles told him all they had done, and he took them and withdrew apart to a town called Bethsaida. Okay, he wants to get away with them. When the crowds learned it, they followed him. Now, what do you want him to say here? But he closed the door and stayed inside because he was sick of dealing with people. But it's not what it says. It says, when the crowds learned it, they followed him, and he welcomed them, and he spoke to them of the kingdom of God and cured those who had a need of healing. So here's exactly what Brad was talking about. There are times when even in the middle of our rest, if it's not to our peril, we say, okay, the needs of the people take precedence over my desire to rest right now, but I'm not going to ignore my desire to rest. So if we turn over then, and this story is not completely told by Luke, he tells parts of it but leaves parts of it out. So if we go over to Matthew, you get to see a piece of the picture that you don't get to see in Luke. So we turn over to the Matthew section, and you don't have to, I'll read it when I get to it. All right. So it begins, then he broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowd, and they all ate and were satisfied, and they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces left over, and those who ate were about 5,000. So he gets done feeding the people. He's all done with that, and immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side. So he says, we still need this time of rest. I want you guys to go off and start to go to the other side of the lake. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. So has he forgotten about his need for rest? No. Has he forgotten that sense inside of him to be unburdened and to have some connection with God? No. He doesn't forget about that. He merely postpones his Sabbath keeping, if you want to call it that, for the sake of the people that he needs to minister to. Do you hear what I'm saying? There's times when we're not legalistic about this. The need in front of my face compels me to act. So if we take it back to the Pool of Siloam principle, it would have been, the Pharisees would have won if Jesus would have walked by the guy and said, you know, if you happen to be here the next time I get through town, I'll deal with you. There are times when we simply have to look a need in the face and we say, I will temporarily postpone my keeping of rest, but I will return to it. I will not put it off and pretend that I don't need it. All right. Now we'll turn over to the Isaiah thing. I'm going to wrap this up. I told you there would be some pieces that, see you, Pat, we wouldn't get to, and this is probably going to be the last thing that we read together. If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own way or seeking your own pleasure or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord. And I will make you ride on the heights of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. So the final thing that we want to remember here, and I think this is probably a good way to end it. By all means, take some time to go through the notes again. But I think the final thing that we want to remember is that Sabbath is more than just a fun day. It's more than just, not that fun is not important in God's economy. We're not saying that. But there needs to be a connection with God and a connection with people that occurs on the Sabbath. And if that is not part of it, then we've not been made relationally whole. Remember that part of my inner man, we said that rest is a response to my world, the same as work is. And my response to God on that day of rest is as important as my response to the rest of the world. So that's my concluding thing. If you want to mow the lawn because that's what you find resting, if you want to pick carrots or raise carrots or go to the beach or whatever it is you want to do, but Sabbath is not Sabbath if it does not incorporate communing with God and reconnection with God. It's just a fun day. Nothing wrong with fun days. Have as many of them as you can afford. But they're not Sabbath. Okay. I hope that was...
In this morning's Bible study, we reviewed the principle of Sabbath, which is a duty to desire and a desire to delight. We talked about how rest readies us for Sabbath, and that Sabbath grounds us for our work. Sabbath gives dignity to work, and rest itself is a spiritual activity as a response to our world. Sabbath rest is a command. It's found in Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11, Genesis 2, verses 1 through 3, Exodus 16, verses 17 through 30, and in Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 through 17. In this, we discussed the differences in Sabbath of acts of creation, which are prohibited on a Sabbath, and acts of relation, which are encouraged. When Jesus healed the man by the healing pool, and the Pharisees found fault in his picking up his own mat, the man who was healed chose to do what Jesus told him to do. So Sabbath is about being relationally whole. It's also part of being in the world and not of it. We discussed things like Chick-fil-A. We didn't get into things such as devout Jewish practices or even people like the Amish, but certainly they keep the Sabbath as well. Sabbath gives us a gift from God to enjoy God, our family, and our friends. Sabbath also frees us from the tyranny of self-imposed slavery. Sabbath levels the playing field, and the way I wrote that down in my notes was that the Sabbath does not allow for a division of management and labor in our modern working world. The Sabbath is for us. It is not simply a tool for judgment. And that's where rest is not legalistic. We talked about Luke 9, verses 10 through 13, and then the completion of the story, which is found in Matthew 14, verses 22 through 24. Sabbath is not a burden, but a gift, and it's one that we can delight in. Work and worship are both ways that we become more like our Heavenly Father. Sabbath is a time for renewal of relationships. And finally, our practice of Sabbath is a means of blessing to us all, not a way to judge each other.